And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show, with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till Noon Show. It's just turned 4 minutes past nine on this, the 16th of May. How are you all keeping? Hope you're very well indeed. Beautiful, bright morning today. I'm listening to the weather forecast there, and sometimes I think that Met Air and Supply weather forecast generally for the north of Ireland and not necessarily northwest specific. I'm not saying the weather forecast won't come, but it's not showing up on my phone as such. But anyway, we'll see. It'll be a wee surprise one way or other. Right, excuse me. The lines are open for you right now, as always. WhatsApps and texts to 08660 25000, 08660 25000. Give us a call too on 07491 25000. If you want to email, you know the story. It's comments at highlandradio.com. Now, that's grand if you're listening live, but also if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening overnight, please feel free to message us. We'll pick the messages up and include them in our next live show. If you want to watch the programme, as always, you can at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, we're on YouTube. If you could like and subscribe, it would be, or at least just subscribe to the page. That would be really useful, by the way, because it helps spread the word. Kathy and Annie are watching us on Facebook. We're on Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and we're on the X platform, formerly Twitter. Right. Lots of papers out on a Thursday morning. You know that yourself. The Diary People, Donegal News, their headline, Old Town Terrorist Making Our Lives Hell. A group of residents living in the Old Town area of Letterkenny claim they are being terrorised by one of their neighbours and that someone will end up dead unless their concerns are addressed by Gardaí and Donegal County Council. Amid genuine fear over possible reprisals, most of the residents have spoken to the Donegal News with the agreement that they will not be identified. It's understood that the properties in the estate concerned have installed security cameras. Although most residents wish to remain anonymous, mother of three, Katie Boyle, has taken the decision to speak out. She claims that talking to the media represents a desperate last-ditch attempt to find peace and secure a resolution. More in the front of and inside that paper today. The Tyrconnell Tribune, legendary Finn Harps manager Patsy McGowan says the trustees of the current Finn Park cannot be pressured into selling the ground in order to raise the money to build the new stadium in Stranorlar. McGowan told the Tribune that Finn Park is the home of senior football in Donegal and that's where the money should be spent in upgrading the current stadium with a new all-seater stand replacing the current corrugated structure. McGowan said, it's a no-brainer to do an upgrade job on the current Finn Park, which has been home to Finn Harps since they entered the League of Ireland in 1969. The Stranorlar site is not fit for purpose, he believes. It's wet ground and doesn't have the infrastructure around it that Finn Park has with the car park set close by. Okay, I hadn't heard a dissenting voice on that until now, but there you go. Obviously, the plans to relocate are very far advanced. The Derry News this morning, a Derry family has pleaded for help after a highly personalised care package is set to be removed from one of their loved ones. Alan Saunders, who has muscular dystrophy as well as having a tracheostomy tube, is currently under the 14-hour care of local provider Northwest Care, and his story's carried on the inside of that paper also. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, the epicentre of the May 2nd Finn Valley earthquake lay bang on the path of the proposed 10T bypass, but there is no danger, the experts say. The Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies placed the epicentre just west of the N13 between Dunwiley and Tyrconnell, with a good distribution for a magnitude 1.1 event. But of all the things that might delay that, it is not going to be that earthquake, which is good news. The Irish Times this morning, not fantastic reading for Sinn Féin. They have dropped significantly in another poll, whilst apparently Fine Gael has rebounded significantly. Fianna Fáil languished still on 20%. Sinn Féin support has slumped again, while there's been a recovery for Fine Gael, which is now level with Sinn Féin, according to the latest Irish Times Ipsos Opinion poll. Support for independent Fianna Fáil, sorry, support for independence Fianna Fáil and most small parties is steady since the last poll in February of this year. Asked which combination of parties they'd prefer to form the next government, the most popular option was a continuation of the present Fianna Fáil Fine Gael Green combination, which was nominated by 33% of people. A government led by Sinn Féin with neither Fianna Fáil nor Fine Gael was chosen by 20% of voters. So effectively what this poll is saying is that the majority of people, it's not the majority of people, sorry, the biggest majority of people, the biggest percentage of people would prefer Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens to continue in power, 33%, one in three. Only 20% would favour Sinn Féin leading government themselves. With 3 weeks to go before votes are cast in the local and European elections, the results are likely to give a boost to the Fine Gael leader and Taoiseach Simon Harris, but will be deeply worrying to Sinn Féin, which sees another sharp decline in a trend that's been continuing for more than a year. Sinn Féin support falls by 5 points today after a decline of 6 points in the last poll in February. Why do you think that is? Firstly, some people are going to say it's just a poll, polls don't matter. Others are going to say, well, you can't trust polls anymore, can you? That being said, you know, it is representative, apparently, with a plus or minus of 2.5%. They asked 1,500 people. It was a face-to-face questionnaire. Sinn Féin down 5 to 23%. Fianna Fáil sitting at 20. No change. Fine Gael up 4 to 4%. Simon Harris will be happy with that bounce. The Green Party down 1 to 4. Labour Party plus 1 to 5. Social Democrats at 3%. AIM 2 at 1%. No change for them there at all. Right, okay. As I say, if you have any views on that, let us know. It emerged yesterday that Gardaí sent migrants back over the border to the north on a one-way train ticket. This is the Irish Independent. Gardaí sent six migrants back to Belfast on one-way train tickets after they tried to cross the border from the north. 50 migrants were sent back to the UK from the Republic in the last 7 months, mostly to mainland Britain. Last night, Finance Minister Michael McGrath told a Fianna Fáil meeting that between 20,000 and 30,000 asylum seekers could come into the state this year if current numbers continue. 20 to 30,000 asylum seekers this year alone. This is the first time a senior cabinet minister has said the number of asylum seekers this year could reach 30,000, with previous estimates by the government suggesting a figure of 20,000. Mr. McGrath is understood to have told the meeting the number of asylum seekers coming into the state this year had exploded. In February, 25 people were detected trying to illegally enter from the north without relevant visas or travel documents. I mean, it's a side note, really. Five were sent back, one-way tickets. Five out of the 10,000 plus is it's nothing. You know, statistically, it's absolutely nothing. And they probably got back on the train and come back down again, if the truth be told. I'm going to skip to the Irish Daily Star here, just staying with this kind of issue, because I mentioned on the programme that quite a proportion of Ukrainians had gone home or moved to another country, and a listener said, where did I get that notion? Was it just picking that figure out of my head? By coincidence, it's covered in today's Irish Daily Star. More than 20,000 Ukrainian people who had sought refuge in Ireland have now left. The figures were confirmed in the aftermath of the government's decision to cut social welfare entitlements of beneficiaries of temporary protection in fully serviced state accommodation from 232 a week to 3860. The decision was made at Tuesday's cabinet meeting and is part of a wider plan to address growing concerns over Ireland's migration policies. Speaking on RTE's Morning Ireland yesterday, Finance Minister Michael McGrath said that the government has an extensive data bank of information about state supports for people from Ukraine. Almost 107,000 people have fled the war in Ukraine and have been granted temporary protection in Ireland. They're not all still here, though. Apparently, around about 86,000 remain of the 107,000 who came here from the Ukraine. 66,000 of those are in state-supported accommodation. This change will impact the change in the finances, will change about 27,000. He also said there are an estimated 19,000 Ukrainians working in Ireland. So between those that have left and those that have that are working, it's around 40,000. And the balance then 66,000 are in state-supported accommodation. So there you go. That's those details. Now, still a large amount of people here, but that just backs up the point I was making as it relates to the numbers that have left. The Irish Daily Mail, the pro-Putin Prime Minister of Slovakia, was recovering in hospital last night after being shot in an assassination bid that triggered alarm bells across Europe, apparently. Robert Fico was beckoned over to meet a crowd of supporters before a gunman leaned across and fired five times at point-blank range, sending the divisive politician sprawling to the ground. Bodyguards pounced on the would-be assassin as Mr. Fico was carried into a government limousine, which sped away before he was airlifted to hospital. His condition was critical following surgery last night, as police said they detained 71-year-old poet Juraj Sintula on suspicion of the shooting. Apparently he's pro-Russian. And I understand, if I was listening to the radio correctly late last night, that he is in a condition that he'll survive now at this point. The Farmers Journal this morning: construction activity on farms has nosedived this year and is back 30% to 50% on usual levels. Agriculture development firms estimate. A combination of atrocious weather, reduced cash flow and uncertainty around the nitrates derogation has resulted in building projects being either scaled back or put on ice, while concrete sales to farms have dried up. Tipperary-based farm planning consultant Aidan Kelly said he has seen a major fall-off in activity this year. E-scooters are, if you have an under 16 who rides an e-scooter on public roads, they will be breaking the law because new regulations are due to kick in. And we're going to have more on this a little later on in the programme. But children under the age of 16 will be banned from using e-scooters from next week in a move that will make our roads safer. And that's a quote. New regulations on the increasingly popular form of transport were signed by Minister Eamon Ryan yesterday. They will limit users to a maximum speed of 20 kilometres per hour on public roads. Scooters also can't be fitted with a seat, and they are only allowed to carry one person at a time. Funny, I actually only saw my first scooter with a seat yesterday. Now, the gentleman wasn't sitting on it, but I hadn't seen that before. Just coincidental. Minister Ryan said a public information campaign will roll out from Monday and Gardaí will be responsible for enforcing the new laws. He said these regulations will help make our roads safer for all road users and give legal certainty to those who are choosing to get around on new forms of mobility. Over the past few years, we've seen more and more e-scooters and e-bikes. So we'll run through that legislation as it kicks in with the Road Safety Authority in detail a little later on in the programme, by the way. You know, because there's going to be lots of questions about, is it cycle lanes, is it footpaths, is it this, that, and then. And finally, in the Mirror this morning, Amazon's new Irish website could see dozens of bookstores across the country close. Bookselling Ireland predicted job losses and a drop in revenue from an industry that has 220 shops, employs over 3,000 people and generates €189 million for the Exchequer every year. Chair Dawn Behan said, "We're again asking government to think intelligently about what Amazon is likely to mean for booksellers and other small businesses." Now, that's going to be really useful for consumers who like to shop on Amazon, but not good. Not good for, we're told, bookshops. Right, okay. We'll be back soon. Right, our next guest on the programme is Ken Kilbride, Chief Executive of ADH Ireland. And we're talking about ADHD medication shortages. And we heard yesterday from the president of the Pharmacies Union, Tom Murray, that now there are over 400 medicines in short supply, and that's creating a whole host of issues. And we're going to focus on particularly the issues facing those who need medication for ADHD. Ken, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
No, it's important. Right, okay, so what is the issue at the moment in terms of supplies of medication for those with ADHD?
So for people with ADHD, you know, medication is a vital part of their treatment. But we've been seeing rolling shortages of various medications for about the last 12 to 18 months. And so, again, this is causing challenges. And just for an example, you know, what you find is for people when they're on the medication, that you get to a particular point where you find the medication for you. So the same dose and the same medication works for you. Other doses and other medications may not. So when someone will, the pharmacies will be saying, or the health product regulatory authority are saying, the suitable treatments, that's not always true. If you take a lower dose, well, then the reason you went on the medication in the first place to mitigate that doesn't happen because you're on the lower dose. If you go on to a higher level, well, then sometimes what you can find is you have sleep difficulties that can be challenged with appetite. And yeah, just for an example, you know, we've been contacted by families. This is one of the big challenges out there at the minute is, you know, you have a lot of children who will be on the medication, particularly teenagers, you know, doing state exams in the next month and not knowing if they're going to have medication or not. You know, it's horrific what's happening out there.
And if pharmacies were given a little bit more flexibility, might that help? Because there are rules, aren't there, in terms of the dosage, and you can't sort of make up the dosage with multiple tablets. So explain that to us, Ken, and the problems that creates.
So the medication for ADHD is what's called a Class B medication. And so what's happening there is that, you know, there's particular rules around prescribing, and they're very strict on that. And so if you get a prescription that says, you know, for 40 milligrams of X medication, and that dosage is out, the pharmacy can't go back and say, I'll give you 220 grams and make up 40. So the system is quite inefficient at the moment in that. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of clinicians about this, you know, psychiatrists and GPs and pharmacists about that. So there's a whole, you know, not saying rigmarole is the wrong way to put it, but there's a lot of back and forward. And, you know, one clinician was telling me that she started doing ADHD medication 2 years ago. And she said, it was absolutely the worst time to ever consider doing that. And the amount of time and the extra admin in doing it now, okay, that's not equating to the people that can't get the medication. But just getting it is just a huge challenge. There just shouldn't be.
That does complicate getting the right dosage, getting a person to the right level, the right dosage, the right medicine, and maintaining that. Because, you know, that takes a little bit of finesse, I presume, to get someone to the right point at the right time with what works for them, doesn't affect sleep, doesn't affect diet or appetite or what have you. You might actually just get there and then go in the next day and told, I'm sorry, but we actually don't have, you know, the dosage in the configuration that you naturally need.
Well, again, what you're finding there is, you know, people are now ringing around your 20, 30 pharmacies to see if they have supply. And again, you're absolutely right there in terms of putting it that way. And again, there's challenges there in the system. And one of the other things we're finding is that there has been a large increase in awareness around ADHD in the last 2-3 years. So there is that increased demand coming into the system as well, particularly from adults. So, I mean, if you take just an example of Donegal, you know, with a population of about 170,000, you know, if there's a population or a prevalence rate of about 5%, you're looking about 8,000 people in the county, which gives you about 6,000 adults and 2,000 children. So there's an awful lot more people looking to get the medication, and that's feeding into the problems as well.
And the supply and how we purchase medicines is somewhat complicated.
Yes.
Are we, so without digging too deep into that, are we seeing similar shortages in other areas, or is this particularly affecting us and how we deal with the drug companies?
Well, again, one of the challenges, you know, and you probably heard the term generics. So there is generic medications out there because a lot of the medications have come off license at this stage. But because there has been some production difficulties in the system there over the last couple of years as well, along with increased demand and then challenging, you know, putting in the rules around prescriptions. And this is what's causing the challenges for people out there with ADHD today.
It's about management too, though, right? Surely. Oh, yeah. I mean, if we were planning correctly, there are times where there's probably more of these medicines available that we could be sort of saying, right, okay, we anticipate there might be a shortage of such and such a medicine, so what we'll do is we'll front load our orders now or we'll stockpile it, right? And, I mean, ethically, you probably wouldn't want to do that to the disadvantage of another Ireland somewhere else, right, taking their supply. Yeah. So if that weren't the case, but there doesn't seem to be any management. It seems very ad hoc, right? We've ran out, more's coming in the middle of the June. Do you know that sort of way? And you couldn't run a business like that. You couldn't have a business supply chain like that because you'd go out of business.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have talked to, you know, organisations like the HSE around this. And, you know, and they're probably the largest prescriber of ADHD medication in the country. And they find these challenges as well. You know, they write the prescription for the child or the adult. And then they find that, you know, that they can't get the supply. So one of the things we will be calling on here is the Health Product Regulatory Authority, or the HPRA, who issue those information around shortages and things like that, to start doing it on a monthly basis. So that we will know what's happening, when it's going to happen, and then we can start planning. Because that planning, you're right, is not there at the moment in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, very frustrating, very stressful. As you mentioned, you know, we're coming into the exam cycle and what have you, and it's not just the person that requires the drugs, it's those around them that support them and often are responsible for sort of... and also, too, we're going back and forwards to GPs when we probably don't need to. You know, GPs are busy enough without saying, right, that's not available, what can we do now? I don't know.
Well, again, that is the problem you're mentioning, that, you know, if they're prescribed 40 milligrams, well, they can't suddenly just give them 220s. They have to get a new prescription, which means, you know, they have to get onto the psychiatrist. They're getting back to them. It's just, it's afraid it's inefficient.
It's unnecessarily complicated.
Unnecessarily, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. That's Ken Kilbride, Chief Executive of ADH Ireland. And we were talking there about ADHD medicine shortages. If you have been affected by that, let us know. Because it's nice to hear a personal story, because it helps us understand exactly how these things work. Hi, Greg. My grandson and granddaughter had tick bites on them from Glenveagh. The GP advised it was not a protocol to give antibiotics and to wait and see. I don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is, because at the same time, you don't want to be giving antibiotics when there is no need. And not everybody who's bitten by a tick will end up with Lyme disease either, you see. So I'm not sure. That sounds probably like the right thing to do, but I'm sure there are people out there that are screaming at the radio saying, no, you really need to you really need to get in there. Let us know what you know. The game between Donegal and Tyrone is on Saturday week, isn't it? It's 7:15 p.m. throw-in on a Saturday. A caller says, Greg, 7:15 p.m. on a Saturday evening is not a suitable time for a championship game. Unfair on players, management and their families. We were also talking about some people giving out that they don't have any children, right? They don't have any involvement with their local club. And they're saying, well, why should I have to pay membership to a club in order to better have a chance of securing a ticket to watch the seniors? A caller says, hi, Greg, without club teams, there'd be no county team. Running a club and putting out teams costs a lot of money. Every membership contributes towards helping to develop county players. Another, anyone who supports GEA should be a member. Membership is what keeps the clubs running, and it is the club's members that are the county players. Greg, we got two tickets for the Gerry Arthur stand on Sunday and paid €80 for them with no concessions. We are both old age pensioners, and on top of that, we weren't undercover and got drenched. Okay, I don't understand that because, as Oisin said, on the website it lists concessions for juveniles and pensioners. So having to pay full whack, I don't know what the story is there. Please let me know. Hi, Greg. Five members in a family in our area. No tickets allocated for 60% of members. Why is this? I presume they couldn't get enough tickets to cover the demand. Right, more people talking about there's no concessions for older people. I was on a trip to Sligo this week and the great 8 kilometre bypass road from Ballyshannon to Bundoran, and we cannot get in and out of Letterkenny. Thanks. It's time to take the streets demanding the Bonnygee Link bypass ASAP. I'm not sure that bypass has been very good for Ballyshannon and Bundoran. A moment of correction on that. We were also talking about the Seafood Shack being ordered to move from its location. I mean, it's an iconic shack there just at the pier. The council want it moved because they want to put a bus stop there. They've got 9 days now to move it. Isn't it obvious what's happening in Killybeg, says a caller? The government want it as a hub for offshore wind turbines and they don't care about fishing or tourists. Keep watching the foreshore licence applications. Okay, we can say good morning now to Dominic Brophy, Director of the Professional Driving Instructors Association. Good morning to you, Dominic.
Morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. So we're talking off the back of a survey of professional driving instructors, members of the Driving Instructors Association. 140 driving instructors were polled in this, both non-members and members of the association. Top of the list was it the, and many people may not be aware this actually happens, a check every other year, a test every other year that you have to undertake, really, I suppose, to demonstrate you're able to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so just to explain to your listeners, the system that driving instructors have, ADIs, as we're called, approved driving instructors. Initially, to become a driving instructor, you go through a three-part exam, a theory test. You do a driving test, and then your final test is you give two driving lessons to an RSA driving tester. And when you're successful in all three parts, and they're not cheap, by the way, they're €250 a go, and you have to keep going on. You've passed all three, and then you're qualified as a driving instructor. And then when you receive your license, and I don't know of any other profession or job in the country, but every 2 years you have to do what's called a check test, where you bring one of your students up to a test center, and you have to give a driving lesson to your student with the tester sitting in the back. And you must pass that to keep your license. And we feel that it's not a proper way, really, of keeping a good eye on driving instructors and improving their ability. We think there's better ways that could be done.
Is there a cost to that as well, Dominic?
Yeah, and a check test also costs €250.
Okay. That being said, there's a high pass rate, of course, 79% pass, 17 fail. And I think your survey found that they might only fail once and never again. But does that not prove that it's beneficial in that, you know, at least it's a bit of a kick up the backside maybe to some? And it's, you know, that is every two, if once every 2 years, that onerous?
Well, it's as the statistics show, 79% always pass. And 17% only pass once and then never.
Only fail once, yeah.
They only fail once. So that's a very high pass rate. But it just goes to show that it's just a tick-boxing exercise. And we feel as if we could do different things. You know, we could get extra categories on our license. We could do first aid tests. Train the trainer, something like that, or something similar to the UK system.
But also too, I imagine, because we are all humans, Dominic, in terms of the box ticking exercise, if it were me, you know, you develop a system, you're working with different people every time, you know what might work with one type of trainer driver versus another. But really, you will conduct the test with the person in the back the way you think they want you to do it. So in other words, it's probably not necessarily representative of your day-to-day work. You're just doing what we do to you guys.
Well, it's not representative of a normal lesson, and every individual is different, you know, and driving instructors are highly trained people. We do this job every day, year after year, and you understand that you can't teach every individual learner driver exactly the same way. But the check test is structured in such a way that you have to teach everybody the same way. And, you know, if I was teaching you how to drive, Greg, and then I was teaching somebody else how to drive, it wouldn't necessarily be the same. Everybody has different personalities. Everybody has different levels of confidence and levels of fear. So you adjust and adapt your style of teaching for each individual learner.
And I presume, too, there's going to be times in the process of teaching someone to drive that you may have, you know, you may feel they're competent in certain scenarios. So for the next couple of lessons, you might, you know, I don't know, go into a more urban area or something along those lines. You know what I mean? So it's never really the same test for any individual, often, I would say. But then you are expected to produce this box-ticking test for the person sitting in the back every 2 years at the cost of €250.
Yeah, and it's not only the cost of €250. There is a penalty if you don't pass this structured test. You know, if you fail it, then you're invited back to do a second one. And then if you fail the second one, then you're invited back to do a third one. But the third one is a very stressful situation for any driving instructor, because if you fail that, then you've lost your job. You've lost your business, your investment in your business, and it's a big investment with your all your exams and your car and your insurance and everything else that goes along with running a small business. Mm. So we feel as if that should be taken away, that fear factor should be taken away, and driving instructors and the RSA should communicate better and find a better system of improving the level of driving instruction in the country, which will ultimately benefit road safety and our learners.
97% of those surveyed believe these check tests are of little or no benefit. 94% would like to see them removed, or indeed to reduce the cost or the frequency of the check tests. This has all been forwarded on to Minister Jack Chambers relatively recently. I presume they've said they've received this, but have you received any sort of feedback from the department on this survey?
No, we haven't as yet. I'd like to be optimistic that we will receive a reply, but unfortunately, Jack Chambers, we have emailed him, and we're always open to constructive communication, but we always get the same generic reply that they've received the email, and if they feel as if there's something significant to get back to us, they will come back to us.
It's kind of strange that, because never more so, certainly in recent history, if we've been talking about the importance of road safety, and it's you and your members and non-members that train people to drive that sort of right at the coalface of it. I would have thought there should be really strong engagement on a regular occasion with the people that are charged with, you know, training people to drive.
Well, it's not from a lack of trying from ourselves, Greg. We are a not-for-profit association, and we're a new enough association. We're only set up since October.
Right, okay. I think that line's broken down, but yep, that's failing us now. I think you might be getting a call in. Listen, Dominic, thank you very much indeed. We'll leave it at that. That was Dominic Brophy, Director of the Professional Driving Instructors Association. I didn't realise they had to do check tests every 2 years, €250. If you fail three, you lose your you lose your business. So it's a bit of stress there, isn't it? Right, back to some more of your texts coming in this morning. Hi, Greg. Irish society has changed seismically in the past 20 years. I think it would almost be strange if there wasn't annoyance, anger amongst the electorate at the moment. I, for one, feel that we're almost constantly being lied to. Take USC as a small example, a so-called temporary measure that we're still stuck with. How many years on, the government is throwing money away left, right and centre. Yet, we have the health service that appears to be crumbling. We've record homelessness. We've a crisis in schools over teachers. We've a cost of living crisis. The list goes on. If people weren't angry, there'd be something wrong. I take your point. Okay, I understand where you're coming from. A caller says, I'm aware of A5 problems, but news to me that those travelling on the A4 from Armagh to Belcoo were also in need of road improvements. Okay. Typical hand-wringing overreaction with this portal in Dublin, Greg. It's only a bit of crack. It is only a bit of crack, but if people are at least appearing to be taking drugs on it or flashing their boobs, it is it's a little bit more than just a bit of crack. It can be quite offensive if children are on the other side in the middle of the day. I take your point, though. We talked about it really not... Everything we talk about isn't just in the context of it being really, really serious and something to worry about. Sometimes things are actually just quirky and make for an interesting conversation. Ulana Herinishina joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Ulana. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning.
Ulana is chairperson of the Ukrainian Community Support Group here in Donegal. We're here. We've heard now from the government that they are cutting benefits to some Ukrainian refugees here. They estimate it's around 27,000 individuals. I really haven't seen yet what the criteria is. I think there's 66,000 in state supported accommodation. I don't understand who these 27,000 are or what is the qualifying criteria for having their payments so drastically cut. Do you have an insight into that, Ulana?
Those news which we follow and those articles. After reading them, we found out that there is not enough explanation for you, for us, especially for you, for all Ukrainians. But the first point is that the payment is cut for those people who live in so-called in accommodations which provide food for them. First of all, they are hotels.
Is it possible with a lot of the services provided, you know, food and, you know, laundry and all that type of stuff, is it possible then, do you think, to live on 3860? What impact do you think this might have on those affected by the cut?
Well, first of all, not everything is free for Ukrainians as well as for other nations and for Irish people. Ukrainians pay for many things. So this amount is not enough, especially if you take into consideration that there are families which consist only of one adult, who is mom, and children. So children demand more money because they get sick oftener, first of all. And it is difficult for such people, such adults, for mothers, to work if their children are under 12, because according to the law, they should be with somebody who is 18 and older.
I presume too, as well as those that can't work because they have to provide childcare, as you mentioned, there's going to be older people as well, I'd imagine, who are unable to find employment. They also may well be affected by this. My point being, whilst many people might agree that this needs to be done, others won't, it possibly will target those in most need of the support.
Yes, they demand more support because those two groups of people, they do not have, in general, they do not have enough English language to communicate with somebody and to find some ways out. First of all, to provide some additional child care, it is also very difficult because to open such business, because it is considered as a business, is not easy. It is, I would say that it is impossible because insurance does not cover this kind of business. Older people cannot learn English quickly because they are older. As a former English teacher, I can tell you that the older person is, the more difficult it is for him or for her to learn foreign language. And I would like to tell you one more thing. Those people who do not work in Ireland or even in other countries, the first issue is language. Mm-hmm. They have a great wish to work, but according to stress, due to stress which they feel, reading news from home, speaking with those who are left in Ukraine, they cannot learn it quicker, and due to their age. We made a research, Ukrainian Community Support Team made a research, which shows the exact numbers that the greatest demand is in English language lessons. But for us, it is difficult to provide and to turn into reality because we do not have any venue to gather such great amount of people to help them with this. Mm-hmm. Because we were established with the help of Donegal Intercultural Platform. We can use their venue time to time. But they also work, they have meetings, they deal with different communities, different nationalities, different refugees, and it is not always available. So there are some issues which we should solve, some problems which we should find the ways out, but it needs time. And we communicate also with other Ukrainian volunteers, mm-hmm. who are, as well as we, they are non-profitable organizations. It is pure volunteering. We do not get any salaries for that. We give the most precious that we can, our time, but we would like to help our nation as well as Irish people help. And the issue with language is everywhere. If we communicate with Ukrainians privately, they always say that they are disappointed that there are no English lessons during summertime. They miss 3 months, according to this. But for us to help them, as I told, there is the main problem. We do not have where to provide lessons. Last summer, we arranged such sessions of English, and there was greater demand of people which we could teach. But this is the main problem. And even not the reduction of... Ukrainians are concerned about this reduction of payment, but they are looking for jobs every day.
Okay, but
they do not suit.
Olana, just in relation to those that this affects, what do you think they will do? Do you believe that they will stay in the accommodation? Will they return home, move to another country? What do you think most people affected by this cut might do now?
I can tell you what I think, but I believe on the when I see numbers and when I communicate and speak, discuss it with live people, there will be some definite amount of people who could return to Ukraine, but I believe that they will go to other countries, not to Ukraine, because there is no free town or village, there is no town or village in Ukraine which is enough safe to live there, especially with children. And yeah, I believe that they will go to other countries. One thing which I know for sure that children can learn any language very quickly. And if they assimilate into the community, they make friends, foreign friends in the country they are staying in, they are first who can contribute to this country. If they move from definite country to another, they will contribute to that country. While there is war in Ukraine, there is very small percentage of people who will go back there. And also about adults, they consider, I say if because I do not see numbers, I cannot tell you that 5%, 17, 27, I cannot tell you these numbers. There will be some definite percentage of people who will do that. But there are a lot of Ukrainians who are highly qualified and they cannot find job. Even there is even some percentage of those who speak English and they cannot find job because they cannot prove their qualification quickly.
Okay, Alana, can I ask you, Alana, why do you think the government has done this and done it now? Because obviously there was a reaction put in place following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but this decision was made as Russia has begun to actually up the stakes in this war, targeting the power infrastructure, the offensive in Kharkiv and the Sumy region. You know, this decision has been made at a time where the situation actually is beginning. It's terrible all the time, do not get me wrong, but it's actually beginning to become even worse. So have you in your mind, and it's only how you feel, have you been able to figure out why the government, the Irish government, is doing this and it's doing it now at this time?
Well, I do not communicate with people who are in government, and I cannot tell you about the reason of their decision. You know, because for me it is strange, because Ireland already contributed into Ukrainians big amount of money, and they move towards, because those qualified people who do not work, they have classes, they change their qualification or they try to prove it. There are two ways for them. And it needs time. You understand that it cannot be done in one day. To have Irish certificates, you have definite time to study. And there is really not a great amount of people who do not work. Actually, they are those who you told, mothers with children and older people. So I don't know why it had been done. Maybe it was influenced by some things, but I don't know which things. I cannot answer this question.
Understood.
Because I am far away from people who work in the government.
No, I get you. I just was wondering if you had a sense yourself. Okay, listen, it's been very interesting speaking to you, Alana. Thank you so much for your time. That's Alana Hernishna, who was speaking to us. She's the chairperson of the Ukrainian Community Support Groups in Donegal. So the changes which were signed off by the cabinet only affect those refugees who are in fully serviced state accommodation. This includes those who have their food, boarding and other services such as laundry paid for. The 39,000 refugees, the balance who will not be affected by the changes, they live in state-provided accommodation that's not serviced, such as pledged housing, accommodation under the offer of a home initiative and rapid build homes. So those in, you've seen down the country, these rapid build homes. So they're living in those, they're living in unserviced state accommodation, or if someone offered their home and they're getting €800 a month or what have you, those refugees will continue to receive the higher payment. And Olana quite rightly pointed out there that a lot of money has already been spent on housing Ukrainian refugees. In 2022, it was over half a billion euro. I'm Irish. Can I get my car fixed? Oh, that's right. Only Ukrainians get this done, says a listener. Hi, Greg. Time all welfare tourists went back to their own country. If they cannot look after themselves, stop using Irish taxpayers' money on them. Get more benefits than the Irish and still not happy. So this caller, obviously, I know you wouldn't want a mother to have to take three or four children back to Ukraine to die. You know, if they came from a more dangerous part, or do you believe it's not quite as dangerous as we're being told? So which is it? Is it that go back, whatever the consequences, or if you have the view that it's not really quite as dangerous as we just heard from Alana there and we heard from Sister Lucia yesterday? Greg, everything else is free for Ukrainians. That's the question I put to Alana. Good morning, Greg. Roderick O'Gorman is to blame. He sent out a message in 8 different languages telling people to come for free housing and free social welfare. No wonder we're being flooded. Ukrainian refugee numbers are down 66%. Shows they only came here for the money. Total, they don't have to pay for a thing, yet they get the Irish taxpayers' money. Another caller says, what did they do with the money that the Irish government gave them? Why don't they live off that? They will have to fend for themselves at some point.